Greetings, listener, and welcome to this episode 68 of Give the Drummer Some Podcast. Right, now hang on, let me find Tom, my colleague. You know Tom, nice bloke, small guy. Right, let me just see, is he on Skype? No, he's not on Skype.
You're alright.
Jesus! What the hell are you doing in my house?
I'm back in Jersey for a bit.
Ah, well, Thomas is here joining us for an episode. And what an episode it was!
It was good.
It was fantastic!
It was amazing. It was the best.
We spoke to Morgan Argren about many different things, and we had a ball doing it, didn't we?
Damn right we did. We always have a ball, man.
We do?
Yeah.
Oh, speak for yourself. We spoke about, well, first of all, his movie that is available on Vimeo. I'll put the link on the main website, on his page, gtdspod.com. And it's Morgan Argren's Conundrum. It is great. It is fantastic. You should watch it. You will love it. We also talk a fair bit about Captain Beefheart, which is
Captain
his
Beefheart
drummer challenge. And he does very well on the score front.
Yeah.
We also talk about his approach to recording, as well as his little studio, which is fan-freaking-tastic. What a drum kit.
That drum kit is insane. I thought Mangini had a big kit.
That is a superpower, but three bass drums.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Awesome. And we talk about many other things as well. So, let me tell you first. Make sure you go to his website at morganargren.com. Also, please do check out this movie that he released. It was a Kickstarter campaign. It did very well, and I'm glad it did because it's a great film. Morgan Argren's Conundrum. Look it up on Vimeo. I'll also put the trailer, in fact, for it on the main page at gtdspod.com. Also, he's just released an album with his friend Mats, and that's the Matt Morgan Band, and the new album is called Shack Tatty, and we'll be playing a track from that at the end of the podcast. That track is called The Swedes. Now, as for us, please check out the website, gtdspod.com, as well as like us on Facebook. Please like us, please! At facebook.com/gtdspod. What else is there?
Can they subscribe somewhere?
They can subscribe.
Where can they subscribe?
Good thinking. They can subscribe on iTunes. Go to iTunes, well, their store, and on the bar on the top right-hand side, type in Give the Drummer Some Podcast. Hit return, it'll take you to Give the Drummer Some Podcast link, click on the link, and then hit subscribe on the side. You will get freshly baked, beautiful podcast treats delivered straight to your computer, hopefully on a weekly basis. We haven't been slack the last couple of weeks, have we, Tom?
Yeah, we've been on it.
We have?
Alright, well.
Well, we've been a bit slack. We haven't been slack! People have been busy, drums have been busy and stuff, but we are back! Back with a vengeance! Have you got a vengeance?
No.
No,
I've got a desire to go lie on the beach.
But we're back. We're back! So, there we go, guys. We've got some great drummers lined up. So if you have questions for Ray Lazier, Jason Bittner, and who else?
That's it.
Thomas? That's not. We've got more than that.
Do we? Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Jason Bittner, Ray Lazier, and we're talking to some others as well. So we'll tell you about them in the next episode. So send your questions in, guys, because then your voice will be on the podcast asking these incredible questions to these amazing drummers. Send them in to gtdspod@gmail.com. I'm bored of listening to me. You're bored of listening to me.
Yeah,
I'm
man.
Sure they're bored of listening to me. Let's just get on with it, shall we?
Let's get on with it. Let's do it.
Give the Drummer Some is sponsored by Supernova Drum Company. Bespoke drums made with unique shell combinations using many different species of wood. Supernova Drum Company, truly custom drums. Visit supernovadrums.com and facebook.com/supernovadrumco for more details.
We'll be right back.
five adventurers on a mission to find out more about the world's top drummers. Join their epic journey as they discover the secrets behind the masters of keeping time and what really makes them tick.
Unbearable suspense and sadistic terror grip the senses as these human transplants threaten the safety of the city.
Hold on to your chairs, folks, for here they are.
Give the drummer some.
Give the drummer some.
Take that crazy rhythm.
Give the drummer some. It's nice to see you back in the old groove again, Daddy. Yeah.
14 mounted toms, 8 floor toms, 4 splashes, 2 gongs, 10 cowbells, 4 rides, 5 snares, man. A roto-tom rack.
And it's all mounted on my infamous quadruple kick drum system.
Hey! Did you touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
Good evening, friend.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Morgan, for being on the podcast. What is the latest release that you've got? What's the latest work that you've been doing?
I have a almost brand new CD out with my longtime friend Mats for the Mats and Morgan band. We released a CD, I think, in May or June called Shaktati, and it's something I've been working on and off for a couple of years, maybe 3-4 years. It's a big relief now when it's finally out, because I was working with my solo album at the same time as the Mats and Morgan album, and that wasn't a good idea, but I just had to work on them at the same time. But then I record for a lot of others, and you know, everything takes time, and living family life, kids and tours and a lot of recordings for others and for myself, you know, so everything takes much more time nowadays than, you know, 20 years ago. And then some of the other recordings I've been doing lately is Devin Townsend.
Oh wow.
I recorded his last release, which is called Casualties of Cool, which is one of all his projects. And it just came out also, and I'm gonna play with him also in London in just 2 weeks.
Oh, cool!
That was a very nice thing also. Very very soft, and you know, no heavy metal at all. It's just a quiet, but really good, you know. So that one took some time, and the Mats and Morgan and solo album and various others recordings. And then I just came back a couple of days ago from doing a couple of gigs with, you know, King Crimson has two setups. They have King Crimson and the Crimson Project, and Robert Fripp is running King Crimson, and Adrian Belew and Tony Levin is running Crimson Project. So I did a stand-in for, they have two drummers, and I did a stand-in for Tobias, the other drummer there. So I played 3 gigs with them the last week.
Cool.
Amazing.
So that was fun, you know, because as you might understand, they are, King Crimson and a few other bands was one of my major influences while I grew up, you know, so it was kind of an honor to be on stage with them and play. You know, when I saw the back, you see the back of Tony Levin and Adrian Belew, and they start Frame by Frame. I don't know if you know that song, but Frame by Frame is you know, just an incredibly cool song. And I, you know, so that was kind of fun.
That sounds awesome, man.
And other than that, recording is still recording on my solo album, still trying to load this fucking sampler that I told you about in the beginning of this chat, trying to get Pro Tools to run as it's supposed to. So that's pretty much it.
Yep. So you got your own home studio, you got a full kit sort of set up at home and...
Yes, this is, I mean, the people who see this, or the people who listen to this won't see my studio. And if I touch this camera, maybe the sound goes away, we'll see. But you see here is the
that's a kick.
Yeah, so I have, you see the three bass drums, and all of the bass drum has internal mics and outside mics as well. And but this is only for recording purposes. I rarely use them, you know, all of them at the same time, but they sound completely different, you know. So there is the little one on the side there is just like a high pitch Elvin Jones jazz bass drum sound, and the middle one is just standard dead muffled bass drum, and the big one is very open, like Bonham type sound. But it's this studio of mine is, it's not big, but it's very good. I, you know, I have microphones in the roof and on the walls and everything. There is mics everywhere, and I just started to work with a Swedish company that makes amazing microphones. And, so I get, even though it's just a little house, I managed to get fantastic sound here, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah, it looks great.
Do you like when you're recording with guys like Devin, do you record it all from your studio, or with Devin did you go into a hired studio?
Well, actually, for Devin, everything was recorded and actually mixed here as well, because that was not really something he asked for, but I recorded here. I always record here. Of course, I can record at other places, but when people contact me and want me to play, I always record here. But then sometimes I go to other cities or other countries and record. Then I, you know, record wherever they want. But this time for Devin, I recorded here, and I, for each track I did, I mixed the drums, you know, just for him so he could hear my take. You know, not really to present a mix, but to present, so what do you think about this take, you know, like that. But for each MP3 I sent him, I did like just a little mixing so he, you know, get the sounds together. And then he, it was funny because he got so excited by my mixes, so he got the multi-tracks for every song, but he also got a stereo, like a high resoluted stereo mix of my drums. And I was told that more or less all the tracks ended up with my stereo mixes, with my settings and plugins and stuff. So he basically kept my mixes, and then he mixed his other instruments around my drums, you know. My mixes had only the drums, nothing of his instruments, of course.
And talking of recording, are you going to be doing any work with Fredrik Thordendahl again?
Well, I did many hours of drums for him, I think soon 3 years ago, and it will take time for him to finish, because he has a lot of stuff already with Meshuggah, and he's in fact he's playing quite a lot of drums himself, and I think he's just that typical guy who just goes for intuition and whatever makes him happy he do at the moment. So I think now he probably spends more time playing drums than finishing his album. That's my guess anyway. But you know, I recorded 4 or 5 hours of completely improvised drums, and his idea was to listen through these takes and cut and edit and loop and stuff, you know, and build music from the improvised parts.
Wow, that's cool.
And but it requires a lot of work, you know, and there is Dirk, I don't know how to say his second name, but Verb something.
Oh,
yeah, he's also recorded for him, you know. So I think that maybe, you know, his album is in his mind and he really wants to do it, and but again, Meshuggah is playing, he also run a family and, you know, all that, so everything takes time. And I maybe my wild guess would be that the album will be done in maybe 2 years,
right.
Probably 3, I would say.
What's it like to sort of help co-create a music form like Djent?
Well,
like, you were the main man with Fredrik sort of creating that.
Yeah, that's what I've been told lately. I wasn't really totally aware of that, to be honest, you know, because when I was in USA like 2 years ago and I recorded the movie with Carl King, did a documentary movie, and then when the movie was done, I received the link to the whole movie, and then I mean, like a year after we recorded the movie, the movie was done, and then I got a preview of the whole thing, and then I was listening to a lot of people talking about this, and I know that this album turned out to be popular, and there is bands that might be influenced and stuff like that, but I was for sure not aware that it caused so much impact, so it even started a sort of a style, you know, this Djent. And it was kind of odd for me when I saw the movie, because people are talking about this Djent thing, and I don't even hardly know what it is. And they talk about me and about this Djent, and still I don't know what it is. I mean, I understand now when they say Djent is this kind of style. I mean, I sure understand that, but I mean, it's cool. I think it's. It's nice for me. It was just Fredrik is just a good friend who makes music that I like, and for me it was just music when we recorded. I had no idea what it's supposed to call, and you know, and anything like that, so it was just good music basically.
Yeah, cool. Well, talking about the movie, your conundrum.
Yeah,
it's a great, really, really great. And also the thing, one of the main things I really liked about it was you playing with Tosin and Yannick as well.
Yeah.
And that, do you think that you'd sort of make an album with those guys?
I doubt that, actually, because this was, you know, I was really happy that, you know, when we did the movie, I had like the dates ready, and I know where we were end up being, like in what town and everything, and then I was actually just thinking who can I call that can possibly be interested in just coming down to the studio and hang and have fun for a couple of hours, and you know, and by total coincidence, Janik and Tosin lives near the studio where we were shooting, you know, and Tosin, I've been emailing with a little bit from after seeing some stuff on YouTube or something, and we sent a couple of emails before the idea for the movie came about. So I thought, I don't know where he's living. Maybe he lives. I was guessing he lives in US, you know. So I was googling that up, and okay, he lives in LA. Well, why not? Maybe he can come down, and he was happy to do that. And then Janik, I didn't know before, but I he happened to live very close to this Bell Sound studio. So, but you know, and this was just a one-time thing, and I think that all the three of us would, I'm sure, be happy to do something. But everything requires a lot of planning, and Janik is playing very much, and so is Tosin, and. So when we met at the studio, we had no material really. We just jammed, you know, and just for fun, you know. And one of us maybe has like a few chords and stuff, and we just, you know, had fun. And then we had this fermented rotten fish that we ate. So it was just, you know, but there is no plans. Actually, I have quite a lot of stuff in my computer from this session. I mean, there is only snippets on the video, so possibly I can mix that down. And I have been discussing with Carl, who made the movie, whether or not we can use stuff on the Blu-ray, like or give stuff away for, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
How did the idea for the documentary come about? What initially made you inspired you to create the film?
Well, actually, first of all, this the movie is really the vision, and everything is Carl King's. You know, it's his movie, even though it's about me. It's his way of making entertainment, I think, and he used me. You know, what happened was that I know Carl King since end of 90s, maybe. I recorded a few tracks for him a long time ago, and then, you know, a few mails per year, maybe. And then, like now 2 years ago, when I was 3 years ago, maybe, when I was on my way to US to play, I had a couple of concerts with Bill Laswell. And then I, you know, just randomly send out a few mails, amongst them Carl King, and I said, I'm coming to US to play with Bill Laswell. How are you doing? Are you close to, you know, where we will play and stuff like that? And then he emails me back and says that, oh, that's funny you email me now, because I was actually about to contact you. I'm planning to do a movie, I'm planning to do like a drum movie. And his first idea was to use me and two other drummers together and just, you know, do a movie about drums and feature three drummers. And he asked me, can I take the opportunity to film you while you are here, so I don't have to bring you back only for that? And I said, sure, you know. So he filmed the stuff I was doing there, clinics and concerts and stuff. And then when I went back home, he made like a collage of some snippets from what he recorded and put it up on Kickstarter and presented this, and he managed to raise quite some money. So, because he wanted me to come back a second time, and that's what I did. So, using that Kickstarter money, we booked another week, and more sessions and more clinics and stuff. And so, but the other two drummers that he was, I think that, you know, he. It's my guess, anyway, that he thinks it's more exotic for him to portray a non-American drummer than American drummers that most people already know. So he asked me, you know, after 2 days, he asked me, is it okay if I make a documentary of you instead of doing this movie with the other two guys, you know? And so that's how it happened, you know.
Cool. Who would you say is a better tennis player, you or Marco?
Well, just watch the video and you'll see. Well, it was, I was really, you know, I think I was, you know, as I said, it's seen on the video. You can see that I don't always play, especially the serve. You saw my serve that was almost like an old... Ivan Lendl, Boris Becker, Björn Borgsson. That was, it doesn't happen every time for me, but...
Right, that was a fluke shot.
yeah. But I used to play actually quite a lot when I was like 15, something. They had a tennis, they built a tennis place there near our house. So during the summers, I played quite a lot. And in fact, Janek Gvistala is playing a lot of tennis nowadays, and he's supposed to be really good.
Noticed a change in your career since the movie came out at all?
Very hard to say, actually. I can't really tell. I haven't noticed anything like clear that before or after the movie. No, I don't think. And I think that doing what I'm, you know, I've been playing all my life, and now I'm, you know, 47, and little by little the things get better. You know, it's tough business. Music business for everyone is quite rough, you know, and it's not easy. But little by little, after all these years of wanting to do a specific thing, you get payback, you know, maybe not only for one movie or one CD like that, but many things, and after a while it gets maybe payback, you know.
Yeah. Well, in the film, Christopher Schlegel, he puts it perfectly. He says, before kids start to invest heavily in their bands, they should watch this video just to see the truth of the music business. Have you noticed a sort of big change in the music business in the last sort of 10, 15 years?
I think that it is harder, I think, but you know, since I've been doing this so long, things go better for me. I think for every year it has been a little bit better, although there is the atmosphere is maybe still harder than before in a way. You know, there is hardly the CD, the compact discs doesn't hardly exist, and there is all you know, downloadings, and I think that compared to in the 70s and 80s, it must have been easier to work than now. But on the other hand, there is more opportunities maybe to make an impression playing live. Mm,
yeah.
But I think that well, it's just very hard, you know. I think internet helps also, because I record a lot for people, you know, and I can stay in my little house here and people send me files and I record for them and get paid for that. So that's kind of, that wouldn't be possible in the 80s, you know, because before the internet. So it's there is two sides of the coins with most things, probably.
I was going to say, because like, as you and a lot of guys have, they have their own home studios now. Do you think that kind of makes it easier to do session work, but then again, because of that, a lot of studios are closing down and everything?
Yeah, it's much easier and nowadays. And I think, I mean, big studios closing down is sad in a way, but it doesn't really... I think it's more creative that people can sit at home just with a laptop and to use their IDs and be creative. It's I don't see it. I mean, it's sad if every big studio in the whole world closes. That would be sad, because there is some limits somehow. I mean, at least for me in this place, I can't have a big band here. You know, it's like three guys, and that's enough for this specific studio. But I mean, it's nice to, when you're in big studios, maybe you play also with other musicians at the same time sometimes, and not necessarily, but I mean, that is, I mean, the downside could possibly be that it's so easy. I mean, in the old days, people just had to write music without too much help by, you know, because you have these laptops and everything is, you just press a few knobs and then it's almost like a good start for a composition. Maybe it's, but I think that everything is in your mind, I think. So if you have good ideas, they will come out even without tools or with tools. And I think that I don't have too much prestige also about how a composition comes up, if it's because you have a pen and a paper, and like you do like Stravinsky, you need only a pen and a paper and a big score, and you write the right, you compose The Rite of Spring on a hotel room with the score and paper. I mean, that's unreal, you know. But but I think it's about taste, and if you have an idea, if you open up a program and you just press one button and you have already fixed grooves and templates that everyone uses, you can somehow maybe form your own idea if you have something in your mind, you know. So that's the most important thing, I think.
So if anything, you'd say it's kind of, it's just evolving, and I think it's the next kind of step in the evolution of recording and expressing ideas.
Yeah, I think it's much easier now. I think it's good that it's easy just to open up a computer and be able to record it instantly like that. Maybe people get away what could be a downside is that people stop playing acoustic instruments because everything is there. You have the sampled drums, you have the sampled bass, and blah 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 blah. Back in the days, maybe you had to play bass. You don't have a fucking keyboard and stuff and samplings to do everything for you. You call some friends that can play the instruments you need, and you form a. I mean, I don't think Led Zeppelin was created in GarageBand, if I put it that way.
Yeah, it's like, I think you can do music degree courses now where you don't have to play an instrument, you just program everything in, and it's a 3-year degree.
Yeah, that could be the downside, I think. But it's two sides of the coin, I think. Mm. You might get less bands coming up as bands, if you know what I mean. Like, that creates something as a band by playing together with real instruments and forming a sound and a style by playing together, you know, that might be less of these things.
Going back to the movie, at one point you play a cymbal that's in between the bass drum and the pedal.
Yeah.
Was that complete accident or did you kind of think it was?
Complete accident, actually. You know, I as I was playing, I saw that, okay, if I continue doing whatever I was doing, the cymbal will go off the stand. I knew. I mean, I saw it was coming, you know. But and I accepted that, and why not just take the cymbal away? I was thinking while playing. And then it, you know, just to create a nice Keith Moon ending on my little improvisation. And then the cymbal fall down on the floor toms, and then it just happened to end up between the beater of the bass drum pedal and the head, you know. But that never happened before, but that was completely, you know, coincidence. And that's what I like, you know. I like to, if it's possible to get surprised, even though it's me playing, if stuff happens that seems to be out of my control, or, you know, it's nice not to be too safe, I think, you know, if stuff happens that inspires you and stuff happens that makes you react different and come up with new ideas, that's what I like, you know, when I improvise.
Yeah. Have you used that again since? Have to record anything, or?
Not exactly that thing with, but I was also playing around with the microphone, you know, holding the microphone on the floor tom, creating like almost a feedback, and that I used to do more planning to do it, you know.
Yeah.
But not the other thing.
I mean, you're a self-taught drummer, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, all what I do comes from many years of listening to albums. I listened to, already by the age of 10, I discovered Buddy Rich. And I was heavily influenced by his playing, and I wanted to play like him, and I tried to imitate his playing style, which was, very good as a practice, you know, because he had such a nice touch and smooth touch and incredible technique, and trying to imitate that as a 10-year-old probably gives you a good basic playing technique, I think. So
cool.
And but then after came all the other bands, you know. So, I'm self-taught, but it comes from, you know, first it was Buddy Rich, and then you find Mahavishnu, Return Forever, King Crimson, and Alan Holdsworth, and Miles Davis, and Zappa, and Beefheart, and all these guys. So, for many years, I was listening to them and got inspired, and so. But I never had like a, I had a few good teachers that learned me stuff, but usually what made me most excited was just to I don't like reading books, drum books, that much, and sometimes I get a homework, page 37 or whatever, but then I end up just, you know, playing by myself. But that doesn't mean that there isn't the good stuff to exercise and stuff, but for me, in my case, I think it came without knowing it. I was just imitating all these drummers, and from that I got my playing skills.
I was going to say, to me, you seem like a very instinctive drummer. You kind of just almost go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you would be the same drummer that you are if you maybe had lessons, or would you sort of gone down a bit? Do you think that you would have that instinct?
Well, I still had lessons, quite many, because I went to school and I had to go to lessons, and they were fine, you know. But I think that, I don't know where that comes from, but I think that I just had some kind of own idea what I wanted to do. But again, that came from the albums I was listening to, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Because everything was on these albums, the vibe and the everything, you know. So to open up a book and study, it felt the wrong way for me.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you're very anti-book, but I love books.
I hate books. I'm sort of self-taught myself, so. I just find it interesting how different drummers are. Because at the music college I was at, the readers, they weren't as good at sort of improvising with other musicians, whilst the guys that didn't read,
mm-hmm.
you know, we sort of got it pretty quick. So I kind of...
Well, it's for sure that there is tons of very well written books, good drum books and theory books in music in general, I'm sure, you know. But I think that the best thing is if you dig in your own mind and you search for who is you and what is actually you, you know. And there is a lot of quotes, you know. I used to quote, you know, Pablo Picasso said, "You can't teach how to paint; it has to be found." And there is also like Zen Buddhist sayings, stuff like that. And because you want, it's about to find a personality also, you know. And you don't really read how to be personal, you know. It's something that's inside of you, hopefully, you know. And then but I mean, you can listen to albums, you can read some books, and maybe after that still you comes the person who is you. But I mean, all the people that I got influenced by, not only drummers but composers and guitarists and whatever, you know, all the ones that made most impressions to me are people that went their own way and didn't go to a specific method and following side by side and bar by bar. I mean, to play like a guitarist like Alan Holdsworth, I mean, there's nobody that came from just being him, you know. And there's so many examples like that. If you take a drummer like Christian Vander of Magma, he made albums for 35 years in an own invented language. I mean, that's kind of, there is not in a book, you know. He gets a vision and he creates a band singing in a made up language. I think it's fantastic. I really prefer to break away from the standards and the norm, because then there is stuff that you can find there, you know. And it shouldn't be different so you can say it's different. I mean, it has to be good, of course, you know, also. I mean, and that's about taste also. But I like people with character, and I like musicians that has a strong character and their own voice. And I think that you go to Musicians Institute and everyone is doing the same thing. I think it's harder to be as... if you live on a desert island and you build up your own world from your own impressions there instead of just being in this form, I think it's more likely that you become an own individual.
Yeah. Well, moving on from the drums, and also a break from the norm for us as well, is on the video, you served up some Sir Stromming, which is fermented herring.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
How? Why?
Well, it's very Swedish, you know. I emailed Carl and I said, how about if I bring this disgusting fish and scare the Americans a little bit? And he thought it was a nice idea. And I was actually talking with Frank Zappa about this fish also, and I was trying to get him to check out this fish, but I never managed to, because you're not actually allowed to take this fish on a plane, because it can, you know, the can of the fish is already it's because of the gas.
Oh, it's expanded a little bit.
It's expanding, yeah, and going up in there, if you take it like in the cabin, it's for sure not allowed, because it can, you know, and the smell of the fish is you can't imagine. I tell you, it's really, really incredible, and it's so strong. When you open the can, you have to do it underwater, because otherwise, as soon as you pop the surface of the can, you know, it's because of it's so much pressure, you know, of the gases from the smell and these fermented things. So you open it underwater and then you serve. But if somebody opens up one can like in this area, it you can feel it. It's like that, you know. It even like three houses away, if they open up and they have like you know, this happens maybe once or twice a year when there is this season for this fish.
Right.
You feel it from a long way, so it's super, super strong.
So it's a traditional Swedish thing to have, or is it literally a once a year kind of thing?
Mainly once a year, I think. Maybe twice. I can't. I'm not really a big fan of the fish myself. I tried it, but I think I can actually. The smell is okay for me, but the taste is worse, I think.
Right. That sounds pretty bad.
Yeah.
I know the guys didn't enjoy it on the movie anyway. So.
Yeah. It was really nice to see all the faces, you know, the reactions.
Cool. We've reached the point of the quick fire round, so I'll just play the intro for that.
It's time for the quick fire round. Drummer, you have exactly 1 minute, which is the duration of the drum solo, to answer as many questions as possible. Are you ready?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. You're ready. Okay, Tom has got a minute.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Tom? Right. I'll just fire questions at you, and then if you could answer them as quickly as possible, and then we'll maybe talk about some of the answers that you give us. Right, you ready, Tom?
Right, ready to
go. Favorite band?
At the moment, Der Hof.
Favorite movie?
I don't know. Too many.
Your own. We'll go with your own. Batman or Superman?
Batman.
David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar?
David Lee Roth.
The Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
Favorite James Bond?
None. I don't know. Maybe my son likes Skyfall, so that's what I'm going to say. Skyfall.
Cool. Horror or comedy?
Comedy.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Pro Tools or tape?
Pro Tools.
Bruce Lee or Jackie Chan?
No idea. I say Jackie Chan then. Bruce Lee, I mean.
Okay. Oh, time's up. That was pretty quick.
Yeah.
Quick-fire answers right there.
I like the choice of the Beatles, because you say you like a lot of these kind of experimental guys. They had they're a pretty good band for that.
What's that? Say again?
You say that you're a big fan of the Beatles.
Yeah, I said Beatles before Stones, yes. But, yeah, I mean, Stones are very good too, but I prefer Beatles then still.
Cool. And also, you're a David Lee Roth fan?
No, not necessarily, but I think that Sammy Hagar was...
Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Did you listen to, like, a lot of sort of hard rock and stuff growing up, or was it mainly...
I had a few years, you know, when I had... I mean, my brother... turned me into AC/DC because he was a big fan of them, and I can really, really enjoy to listen to them. Even maybe I don't call them as like heavy metal band, it's just something else than heavy metal, it's just AC/DC, it's something else. But for a while, yeah, I got some Pantera albums and stuff, and a Helmet and stuff like that for a couple of years, shortly after a divorce, I think. It was nice to have some aggressive music, and of course, I mean, nowadays I think that Meshuggah is one of the bands that gets me entertained. You know,
You say you prefer Pro Tools over tape as well.
Yeah, but that's because of practical reasons. If I would have a service technician and a big studio and money to run tapes with machines and everything, I might. But I'm very happy with Pro Tools as well.
Cool. And on their comedy, you chose comedy over horror. What would be your favorite comedy film?
It's you know, often when you get questions like this, it's just blank, you know. music or movies, but I just know that you know, there is still some Monty Python stuff that I really find really funny, you know. I mean, stuff that has been maybe viewed too much, like Fawlty Towers and stuff, is still...
That's my go-to on Netflix.
Yeah, I like it. But, so I can't really name like a recent one that I saw that was, you know, that I can mention. But, sometimes it's nice to thrillers and horror movies, sure, but... probably comedy before, I prefer.
Well, it's funny, earlier on you mentioned Dirk Verburen, and also Monty Python now, because for his drummer challenge, he chose The Life of Brian.
Yeah.
Questions on The Life of Brian, and what did he get?
Grail. I got
six. The Holy Grail?
Yeah.
He got like six, and I was kind of questioning if he'd actually seen the movie.
Okay.
But have you ever met Dirk at all?
No, but I'm actually going to meet him in October, it looks like, because I'm going to go to Tallinn and be a part of a concert there. And the guy who is running this is... I'm going to record for him two tracks, and then I'm going to go to join his release party concert, sort of. And so I'm just going to go there and play two tracks. The tracks that I'm going to record. And then he told me that Dirk will be there to do something also, and the producer asked me if we can do something together, me, Dirk, and the composer, so who is also a drummer.
Right.
So we might do some stuff, three drummers then, just for fun.
You'll get on great. He is a super nice guy. He's been on Give the Drummer Some twice now.
So, yeah, okay.
But he's a really, really cool guy. So you're
I'm sure.
Cool, man. You mentioned your favorite band was Dierhoff.
Dierhoff. I don't know how you spell their name, but Dierhoff. It's D E E R Derhoff. Derhoff, I write it here. Der.
What kind of stuff are they? What kind of music is that?
Well, it's they have this little super tiny Japanese girl who sings and play Höfner, Paul McCartney Höfner bass, but then the band is really, it's really, you know, the drummer is also super great. He sits on a bucket or something when he plays, and he sits very low, and he has bass drum, snare, hi-hat, and usually no tom-toms, but, and he's very... but it's not because of that. They just make music that's really special, you know. I'm not, maybe I don't listen to all their tracks, but I saw them live like 2 years ago, and it was fantastic. I think it sounded to me like, for those of you who know Captain Beefheart, if you take some... You know, Captain Beefheart, he did blues, but he also did avant-garde stuff. So if you take the stuff that Beefheart did that was between the blues and avant-garde, but then you play that on 100 times the volume with the, like a punk, Sonic Youth, I don't know, it's just it's very violent. Partly, it maybe for you, I wouldn't say. It's very hard to explain. It's just an unreal mix of music, and there is parts which sounds quite like Dadaism, like Dada. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just good. They have this album that I liked, Offen Maggie, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. I will Google it up while I speak to you, because. For all the viewers, listeners,
you want it?
Yeah, we could. I mean, we can talk about it.
they have an album called Offend Maggie Derhoff, and there is just two songs there which I have been listening to over and over, and I think it's magic. It's fantastic.
Would you like us to play a little bit here? We can.
Well, you're more than welcome. I can. You can. Yeah, you can play. They have this song called. Jagged Fruit is one of them, and then the other one is. I go in here.
I got Jagged Fruit here.
Bit
for you and for the listener as well, if you like.
Yeah, sure. It's a good one. And then this other. I mean, that would be a good intro for this band, I think. They have this other song. Little B part. Homage, but in the wrong way. It's called Aguru Guro, number track 11 from the same album.
Right.
Okay.
And then track 14. Then.
It looks a lot more interesting than all the pop stuff that comes out now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Track 11 and 14 from Offen Maggie is a good introduction.
Okay, I got Jagged Fruit here, all ready to go. So I'll give that a quick go. Where are we? I better turn it down first.
Actually, you know what? Try. You know, this Jagged Fruit has this middle section that it's just fantastic, but people who are, you know, short if they need to get catched faster, you should maybe do track 11, Ea Guru Guru,
okay.
I think.
Get that one synced up. in the background. That was pretty
And the last minute, you know, when the vocals goes away, they have this instrumental section that's totally, you know, but you know, people can check it out if they like.
Are they a Japanese band or
where? No, they are only the vocalist, and I think the band was formed by the drummer whose name I can't remember now, but then the other ones are Americans, I think. And then another discovery I should say now, since this is actually somehow a drum pod thing. Quite recently I found, I don't know if you're aware of a group called Nowhere.
No.
The drummer in Nowhere, Luis Cole, he mentioned a album for me, which I checked out. I found to be really cool, and it's a drummer called Nate Wood. Nate Wood is, besides being a great drummer, he writes like pop albums in the style of XTC and stuff like that. And I think he's really, really good. You know, it's just basic pop music, but very well written and fantastic stuff, actually, you know. And he also plays drums with Wayne Krantz and stuff like that. But he's great. Nate Wood, I would suggest people to check out.
Videos on YouTube, so they're worth checking out.
Yeah, he made an album called Another Time quite recently, I think.
Alright. Time. And that is, I don't see it on YouTube. Probably Amazon or iTunes would be a good place to maybe check it out.
Yeah, they have well, I mean, if you search for a song called Ocean Floor, Nate Wood Ocean Floor, it's just, I don't think it has even any drums, but it's just so nice composition, I think.
Nope. There's a Justin Timberlake one, but I think we'll avoid that one.
Ocean Floor is on this album Another Time. It's on iTunes anyway, but maybe it's hard to find on
I can't see anything on YouTube, so.
But that's at least some stuff that I found recently that I thought it was Derhoff. I found a couple of years ago, but Nate Wood, this album was I listened to first time like 2 weeks ago.
Cool.
It's very, very good.
Well, we've reached the time in the podcast for the drummer challenge. Are you ready for this?
Well, update me. I forgot. What is it?
I'll do the introduction to it, and I think it explains on there. I'll just play it now.
Hey, drummers. Points mean prizes. It's time to take the hot seat for the drummer challenge.
So we have got questions on your chosen subject, which is Captain Beefheart. We've got 10 questions. So Tom has trawled the internet. He is now a scholar in all things Captain Beefheart. So
okay.
He'll ask you the 10 questions, and then we'll just see how you do.
Well, I hope I can answer them, because, I mean, obviously he was an... He was a big influence, but and I actually read one of his books, Sutton Rollo's, his guitar player's book, and I, as you saw in the movie, we visit his house, you know. So, but I'm not sure I know. We'll see. I might miss some important details. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, so far the highest score is 9 by a UK drummer called Darren Ashford. But the prize is a massive prize. You get to have Tom ran your house for a month to clean your house. So it's a very worthy prize.
I really hope you win, because I want to go to Sweden.
Yeah, you want to go to Sweden.
Anyway, should we go?
Cool.
Cool. Right, question 1. What was Captain Beefheart's real name?
Tom Vemblit.
Yep.
One.
What was... Oh, so I'm actually going to get questions. Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay, so continue.
Question 2. What was his band called?
Magic Band.
Yep. Question three. What was his first album called?
Safe as Milk, I guess.
Yep, that's it.
Three.
Which legendary musician did he have a mutually useful but volatile friendship with?
Frank Zappa.
Yes.
Four for four. Here we go. You're going to Sweden, man.
What career did Captain Beef up to after music?
Painting.
Yep.
Five.
What was the final Captain Beefheart album?
Ice Cream for Crow.
Yep.
Well.
What year was that album released?
82, maybe?
Yep.
Wow!
Finish this album title, Trout Mask.
Replica.
Yeah.
Even I knew that.
I didn't. What was the cause of his death in 2010?
Well, he had, I think I was told by his former band members that he has both MS and Parkinson, which weren't really confirmed exactly, but he suffered at least one of them.
I've got complications from MS, so...
Yeah.
Right, hang on. This is all important, Tom. This is the 10th question. Tom really wants to go to Sweden. So he could camp out... I mean, one of those bass drums you've got there is massive. He might be able to camp out in one of those.
I'm only 5'7", don't you?
Yeah, he's only small.
All right, final question. His drummer, John French, what was his nickname?
Grumbo.
Oh, I'm going to Sweden!
I'm fucking going to Sweden!
That's 10 for 10.
Yeah, but these questions were very easy, I must say. I mean, there must be... what's his wife's name, which was, Jan was actually her name, and and who was actually, you know, I have tons of side stories, you know, people who, so I, since you now research some, I ask you a question on the same subject. Who was the guitar player that entered Captain Beefheart's recording session once, and when he did so, he got scared because someone in the band, which I actually forgot, might be Don Van Vliet, he had like an what do you call this? Not an arrow, but
A crossbow.
Somebody raised a crossbow, and the guitar player that was supposed to come into this session just came in there, and he got super scared, and he bowled down behind an amplifier.
Tell you what, I read about this story, but I can't remember his name.
I've worked it out. Morgan is asking this question because it's for you to not go to Sweden.
Well, that was actually Ray Cooter. He came into this session, and that was what happened, and. And who did a short movie, like a 15-minute movie, or I'm not sure if he did it, or actually, okay, somebody did a movie and a very famous photographer made this kind of movie, 50-minute thing, and a very famous guy is also in this 15-minute movie. Who did the movie?
I don't know.
very famous photographer who shot all the artists in the world.
I don't know.
Anton Corbijn.
Oh, Anton Corbijn. He did Metallica's album. Did Load. He
did a short movie and with Beefheart, and during this. In the movie, Don Van Vliet gets interviewed by a guy that comes from like a projector on the wall behind him, asking Don questions. It's really like video art, but you see this guy on the wall, I think, behind him, and he says, "So Don, blah blah blah," and then comes the question, "And who was that?"
I'm getting roasted here. I don't know.
Yeah, that was actually David Lynch.
Oh.
Oh wow.
And okay, last one. one of Captain Beefheart's biggest fans is the founder of one of the biggest cartoon series in US.
Oh, yeah. It's Matt Groening.
Yeah.
You got one out of four. That's shocking, man.
So I read about that. Was it he listened to one of his albums a few times and he didn't get it. And then when he started to really think about it, he kind of got it.
Yeah.
Well, see, I've only ever heard one Captain Beefheart song, and that was Ice Cream for Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing it. It was on MTV a good few years ago. It must have been about, 15 years ago. And a friend of mine got some absinthe, actual proper absinthe from the, I think it was the Czech Republic. And he said, oh, everyone come round and have some. We had some, and it was just horrific stuff. And the first video I saw after drinking it was Ice Cream for Crow. And I literally thought my mind had been altered by this absinthe.
Yeah.
What a mind.
He basically did two things, blues oriented stuff and more avant-garde stuff. And I think for the bluesy stuff, you can check out Clear Spot or Spotlight Kid, two albums. I mean, if you Google on a track called Big Eyed Beans from Venus, which is fantastic, I think, Big Eyed Beans from Venus. Then you get like slide guitars with a lot of, it's not at all like blues music, even though it has the elements from blues, but it's with such a strong twist to it, you know. And so Big Eyed Beans from Venus is a very good introduction. And then if you want to try out the more avant-garde stuff, you can check out Trout Mask Replica or Lick My Decals off Baby. Dr. Dark from Lick My Decals off Baby's great introduction.
Because I remember hearing a story once that he was in the studio and he wanted a certain sound. He ended up throwing a plate at the wall and it smashed, and he was like, "That's the sound I want." And everyone
There is a lot of stories like this. I was told that Danny Wally, who was a friend of mine, a guitar player, he told me that once during rehearsal he tried to explain for the drummer how to play, and he went to the drummer with his keychain. And I think he liked to fuck with people's minds a little bit also, and not necessarily always making sense. But, you know, because in this house where they lived almost like a cult, you know, they weren't even allowed to leave the house that much. And he had like lectures about how to hold a cigarette in the only proper way, like this or this. And just brain is, you know, weird things. But so he did stuff like that for sure. But this drummer thing, he went down to the drummer and he took his keychain and he just dropped it, so it fell down on the tom toms and landed on the snare like, and then he said, "Play like that." But there is a lot of stories like that, you know. And actually, he also said a nice quote about going to school, which I used a couple of times. You don't necessarily have to take all these quotes that I collected a couple of quotes when I did, because I actually did a drum book myself once, and I collected a lot of quotes. On each page has like a quote, and Dom M. Blitz said, "If you want to be a different fish, jump out of school," he said. I think it's kind of, it's just inspiring to hear people say stuff which has a twist to it, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I think we've reached the end of the episode, don't you think?
Mm.
That was absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure I've ever listened to a podcast, but I guess you go online somewhere and it's, you have to listen to it while or you can download it after and stuff.
Yeah, it downloads on iTunes, or you can listen. We always put our episodes online, so you can sort of listen online as well. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a question I always like to ask at the end as well. It's, if you could pass on one piece of advice to up-and-coming drummers, what would it be?
Jump out of school. No. Don't be afraid of doing stuff that you think is not what people expect, you know, just to be open-minded and don't ask too much questions, you know, about things. Just play and try to find stuff and without questioning things too much. Follow your, you know, follow your bliss.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for being on. It's been fantastic talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
So there we go, guys. Another fun-filled and action-packed family adventure for you right there with Morgan Argren. Make sure you go onto his website at morganargren.com and also please check out the movie Morgan Argren's Conundrum, which you can see on Vimeo. There's a trailer on YouTube. I will put both the link to the Vimeo site page thing, and I will put the trailer on the Give the Drummer Some page at gtdspod.com. Made a mistake there, but I rectified it. It's fine. So guys, we are going to finish the episode with a track called The Swedes.
It's amazing.
It is amazing, which is by Mats Morgan from their latest album, which was recently released, called Shack Tatty. And that is available on Amazon. And do you know what I'll do? I'll put a link at the bottom of the page, Morgan's page on gtdspod.com, where you can purchase the album by just clicking on the picture. Technology, huh?
What a wonderful thing.
Unbe-frickin'-lievable. So we had a great time. We hope you had a good time.
Yeah, they did.
Do you reckon they did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You went quite high pitched then, so I'm guessing that's a firm yes. So guys,
sat on myself.
You what?
I sat on myself.
You sat on yourself? What, like scrote sat? You sat on your scrote?
No.
What?
It's a line from Black Books. Hey, carry on.
Alright. That went over my head. Where were we? Oh yes, the outro bit. But until next episode, play your drums, have fun, and we'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
You beat me to it. Just because you're in my house doesn't mean you could take over.
Well, yeah, well, yeah.
We'll do a combined goodbye. Ready?
1, 2, 3. Bye-bye. I'm going to the beach.
Have to have the last word, don't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, I just thought I had something interesting to say, you know.
Well, whenever do you have anything interesting
to say? Well, I try. Look, we're only going to have this conversation then.
Well, I think, yeah, it's a very valid conversation to have.
Yeah, well, not when they're listening.